Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Many people are aware that Gerald Tanner called the Salamander letter a forgery. But did you know that Brent Ashworth beat him to the punch? Brent tells what he thought of the letter when Mark first read it to him, and he didn't buy it because he specifically said it was a forgery. Brent will tell us more about this and why the document was then offered to Steve Christensen. You won't want to miss this episode. Check it out. By the way, if you missed out on a copy of Show and Tell, Brent was kind enough to give me another book, and this one's actually pretty rare. I think there's only about 100 copies of these out. This is William E. McClellan's Lost Manuscript, and so this is a book written by Brent, and he talks about finding the real McClellan manuscript. So this is about a $50 book, but there's only 100 copies printed, so it's very rare. So if you'd like to win this one and you didn't get a chance to win the Show and Tell book, sign up at gospeltangents.com/Ashworth. Of course, if you're already signed up, you don't need to sign up again. You have a chance to win, and you could win William E. McClellan's Lost Manuscript. So sign up today. Now back to our conversation.
Was there anything else we've missed?
Yeah, well, let's see. There probably are, but... Well, it was while I was on that trip to Missouri in 83, the one I went to the reorganized church on, that Hoffman and I were trying to complete a trade for the full-page forgery of the Book of Alma, you know, the original Book of Mormon manuscript.
Oh, the printer's manuscript.
Yeah, that's in here, too, if you want to see it. In fact, Royal Skousen was in here a while back wanting to add that to his... He wanted all of Hoffman's stuff to add it to the... Yeah, I says, really? Church's going to waste their time? He says, yeah, well, we have to document it. So he wanted that little piece from Mosiah, and then he wanted this bigger thing here. But we made that trade, and I gave him an original, the last known letter of Wild Bill Hickok before he was shot in the back, the saloon there in Deadwood, South Dakota. Yeah, I've always regretted that, but... He sold it off with some other things to a guy by the name of Zubiak, who later went to prison for setting fire, kind of like John Jenkins, for setting fire to his business down in L.A., warehouses or something. Supposedly they were destroyed, these documents. I hope that's not the case, but they've never reappeared.
Well, the Great Chicago Fire, they still got the Book of Abraham, so who knows?
Yeah, there you go. So I'm hoping. Let's see, talked about that. Arthur's Jail. Well, the Canandaigua letter, you know, the Joseph Smith letter that he came up with to Stoll, the money
digging. Josiah Stoll.
Yeah, Josiah Stoll. He showed me that before they moved from their home down in Jordan. I was there the day the first son was born. He had to run his wife to the hospital. But at any rate, later when I was in there before they moved up to his parents' home, and I can show you the Haas Hoffman sign too before we forget, he told me, he says, well, I've sold a letter to, he promised me the next letter of Joseph Smith holograph, and he says, well, I've sold this one to President Hinckley. And I felt a little upset he hadn't offered it to me, but then when he said President Hinckley, I thought, oh, that's fine. And I says, well, how come you didn't offer it to me? He says, you wouldn't have wanted this letter, Brent. It was about money digging after the Moroni visits, you know. And he says, you wouldn't have wanted this letter. And he said, you know, I sold it to President Hinckley for $15,000, I think is what he told me earlier that day. And he said, I told President Hinckley I hadn't kept a copy of it, but I have one. Would you like to hear what it said? Can you believe this? And I says, well, look, Mark, if you told the president that you didn't have a copy, I sure don't want to hear it. And I walked out of the house with him trying to read the letter to me. That's how I left the house that time. I immediately got in my car. Luckily, I made the right move and drove down to my dad's architectural offices here in Provo. 40-minute drive, 30-minute drive from South Salt Lake. And I confronted my dad on it. I was really upset. The only time I never lost my testimony of the prophet. The only time in my life I ever questioned him was at a half-hour drive. What is Joseph Smith doing dealing with Stoll after the Moroni visits? Made no sense to me. So I confronted my dad with it and told him about it. Dad had been a bishop, but he was the wisest person in my life. And I just said, Dad, what do you think about this? And he says, well, Brent, what I know is that you have a firm testimony of the gospel. You're not worried about whether it's true or not. I said, that's true. But I'm questioning Joseph Smith a little this afternoon. He said, well, we've all got things we question. He says, I have a mental shelf that I put those questions on and realize that someday they'll be answered. He said, I suggest you do the same thing. Anyway, best advice I ever got. And it went on the shelf very long, a couple of years to find out it's a forgery anyway. So it didn't matter too long. I didn't have to wait too long for that one, you know. But that was good advice. But anyway, that's that story. So it was kind of, I mean, there's lots of stories. I don't know how many of these you want to get into. But there was a press conference where on the Lucy Mack letter. I actually got my Martin Harris letter before I got the Lucy Mack, but it was done at a press conference later in October after the October conference. Lucy Mack came first. And that was an interesting thing because right before the press conference was set for Monday morning, we met with President Hinckley because I was out mowing the lawn. This was August 21st of 1982, to be exact. And I was out mowing the lawn. My wife came out on the deck. You've been in our old house. She came out on the deck. She yelled at me. She said, hey, there's President Hinckley's secretary's on the phone. Well, I couldn't imagine why, but I went in and got on the phone. Says it was Saturday. It says, could you meet with the president in an hour? You know, I was in my grubbies, but I thought, well, yeah, we can clean up and get up there. Sure. So we did. They told us where to go through their underground parking into the 47 East. It was locked in the front. So we did that. And the guy that had called me later was in our stake. And he was the head of the church press, the job President Hinckley had years before. Heber Woolsey was his name. He's on our stake. In fact, I got in trouble as a kid for throwing rocks at his car after primary one time. Lucky I didn't get my butt kicked. But at any rate, I was hoping Heber wouldn't remember me. You know? And he didn't. And on the way into the President Hinckley's office, he went in through the basement. Heber says, and he was in a golf shirt, and I was dressed in a suit. My wife was dressed up. And he says, now if you could just come up with a VHF of the King Follett discourse. Yeah, I remember him saying that. Before we left, I was serving as a bishop at BYU, and the ward had given me for Christmas one of the new, it just come out, the new triple. You know, the Bible had been out in 79, 81, the new triple had come out, triple combination. And I had one of those nice leather, limited to 600 copies that the ward had given me, you know, our BYU ward. It's really nice. And I asked Charlene, I said, my wife, I said, should I throw that in and take it up? I could get a signature we don't have, you know. She said, no, don't do that. That'll embarrass the heck out of me, you know. And, but I threw it in anyway, thinking I had to take my briefcase with the Lucy Mack in, and so I might as well throw it in. There may not be an opportunity. So we get up there in the meeting, and President Hinckley comes to the door, you know, when Heber knocks on it. All the offices are locked and closed. President Hinckley's is open in the front of the building. We came through the back, and he opens it up. He looks at us. He looks at Heber. He says, Heber, you've been out doing your lawn. That's what I'd been doing, you know. And he says, you've been out doing your lawn. And he says, yeah, sorry I'm not dressed up. Any rate, then we went in and we left him, and it was just my wife and I and President Hinckley in his office. And I'd only met him once in the Army, you know, years before. That was a different experience. And we showed him the Lucy Mack Smith letter, and you know, he had me read it to him, and he paused. He wanted to see. I gave him a copy of it. And then there was kind of this pause. He was starting to write a few things on a notepad and making notes to himself or something about the meeting. I don't know. And I thought I saw my chance. So I said, President, would you mind describing my Book of Mormon for me? I didn't dare look at my wife. Any rate, I hand the book to him, and he doesn't say a thing. He just keeps writing. I'm really nervous. I want to look at Charlene, and he's writing. And he got done with his writing, and he says, Brent, this is what I would like to write in your book. Is this okay? And he wrote back what he read back what he'd written down on his pad. And it was in remembrance of the day Brother and Sister Brent Ashworth met with me, and we read together the original letter of Lucy Mack Smith to her sister-in-law, Mary Pierce, and so on, so on, so on, so on. And, testifying as to Joseph Smith's role as a prophet, you know, and he signed it to Gordon B. Hinckley. Well, it took up the whole front of the book. I wished after that I would have had enough nerve to say, do you mind if I get your tablet too? I didn't have the nerve for that, but I got the book, and after the letter became a forgery, I didn't dare show that book to anybody, you know, especially, you know, and I still have it. I mean, I can show it to you. I didn't bring it today, but I do have it, and it's neat. I've shown it to people later after it. No big deal, but it does show how deep he is into church history and everything, too. And that was my first meeting with him. And then we had, you know, like I said, about 20 meetings after that. And he wrote me a lot of letters after that. And when Rick Turley was doing his book, Victims, he called me up one day. And he said, Brent, I need President Hinckley's letters from my book. And I says, well, Rick, we're both attorneys. You know, Rick was an attorney. I says, you know, that's we can't do that because the author of those letters owns them and he's still living, you know. He says, oh, yeah, I guess you're right, you know. And that was the end of the call with Rick. 10 minutes later, I get this call. This is Mary. Would you hold for President Hinckley? and he gets on. He says, Brent, would you give Rick my letters? He needs them for the book. I says, you bet, President. Shortest call I ever had with him. Yeah, so that was funny. But anyway, this is probably one of the most important stories, and I didn't tell it all. And that was that we had this deal going for $30,000. I went and got a loan, you know, from the bank.
For the Dunham, Jonathan
Dunham.
This is for
the Dunham letter. And I really wanted it. Then I get this phone call a week later after he hasn't delivered it. Like I say, when you don't want him, he shows up. When you do want him, you can't find him. So hadn't heard from him, but I heard from my mother-in-law, Charlene's mother. And they lived down in Phoenix, and they got the little LDS newspaper, and it was all over down there that Hoffman had sold this Carthage jailer for $20,000, $10,000 left. And I couldn't figure that, and I was really angry because I'd been waiting for this letter. So I hopped in the car. It was like 10:30 when I left, by the time I left. I get up there about 11:30 or after 11, and all the lights are out in Hoffman's house, obviously. And I go up on the door, and I knock on the door. I'm really angry. I mean, this is the most angry I think I was during that period. And I knock on the door, no answer, nothing. So I've never done this before, but I went out, and I parked in his driveway. I go out of the car and lay on the horn. I just lay on it, you know. And I'm seeing these other lights go on. I'm thinking the neighbors are going to call the police. I didn't care. I used to work with the police. I think I can work with them again. And I didn't care about that, you know. I wanted to get to this guy. And finally, the light in the Hoffman house comes on, and he comes to the front door in a bathrobe, in his pajamas. And I go up there, and I start questioning him. And, you know, he lets me in, and we go in the living room and sit down. And I'm interrogating him. That's what I'm doing, you know. And I says, did we not have a deal for this? This such and such, and you were supposed to deliver it on such and such, and we had a deal of $30,000. You knew I went and got a loan, and I've been sitting here paying interest on it for a week or two, and I got nothing. And I find out you've undersold it for $20,000 to somebody else. Well, when Hoffman didn't have any answers, it was always this. You know, he'd look at you and do this little deal with you, his shoulders, and that's all I was getting. And I was getting more angry as I was telling the story, and I'm sure I was waking up the dead, his wife and kids and everybody. It's a little house, so I storm out the front door, okay, slam the screen. Hoffman finally comes out of the screen, didn't say anything other than invite me in. Brent, come on back, get it all off your chest, you'll feel a whole lot better. I says, Mark, I just got it off my chest, and I feel a hell of a lot worse, is what I said. And I hopped in my car, and I headed back to Provo. It's probably midnight by then. And as I'm passing the point of the mountain, I'm thinking, this is what I'm thinking. This is where Hoffman belongs. He belongs here.
Oh, in the jail.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. The prison. Little did I know, right? This is a year and a half before the bombs took off. But that's what I'm thinking. I thought, I'll never deal with him again. In fact, it was during that time that Al Russ later reflected on when he came to my old store upstairs years ago. And he says, you know, Brent, you were the only one that ever warned me to stay away from him. And you warned me twice. And I continue to deal with him. And I says, Al, I really appreciate that compliment, but I don't deserve it. Because he brought me the Dunham later, and I went back and dealt with him, you know, before the bombs went off. But at any rate, that kind of cooled it for us for a few months. And I was screwing up his business. I mean, people say, what motive would Hoffman have to put you on a list? Well, I'll tell you, I was messing up his business. I was trying
because
to
you were talking about his...
Yeah, I was trying to mess up his McClellan deal. I was trying to mess up every deal I could think of that I heard he was involved with. Kurt would say something, I'd say something. It was all true, but it was all nasty, you know, because it was true and nasty about his dealings, you know. It was authentic. I was trying to warn him. And Hoffman had to shut me up, so he calls me up in July of 85. And this is a year later. He calls me up. We'd done a few little things here and there, but no deals, really, during that year. As I was determined to stay away from what he'd done with me on this Dunham letter. And it cost me some money and time and everything else. I was through with his lying and stuff. I just was tired of it. And it didn't make any sense to me, especially like on that. Maybe he figured I had too many of his forgeries by then. I don't know. But that deal was really the one thing I really wanted was this letter. I laugh about it now because it's a fake, but, you know, at any rate, that was the way we thought about it at the time. And he called me up and he says like this, he said, Brent, I got the letter. He says like that. He says, what do you mean you got the letter? Well, you know, the letter, Joseph Smith. I said, well, how'd you get that? He says, well, I got it back from Dick Marks. Of course, the price won't be $30,000 anymore. It's $60,000 now.
What a jerk.
Yeah. I says, Mark, I didn't want it at 30 with the way it had gone, you know. There's no way I'd pay any more than 30 for it now. And I slammed I was mad, you know, slammed, still mad a year later. And then I thought about it. I thought about it, and I thought, crap, I'd love to have that letter. So I said to him, I said, well, I don't have that kind of money now. I've still got a lot of loans out and stuff on our previous deals from last year. He says, well, bring me this, this, and this, and give me the difference. I think the difference came out to, I gave him the a letter of David Whitmer, which ended up at the church archives. I gave him the first letter we bought, that Joseph Smith. To his
and these
wife.
Are authentic.
Uh-huh. Well, it's not authentic, but we thought it was.
Oh,
know.
Are these? So these
are all fakes.
Yeah. So Hoffman had sold you these, and then he wanted them back.
He wanted them back. So this is the first time he made that attempt, was on the Dunham letter. The big deal came at the end. That never happened. But at any rate, I told you about that. After Hoffman went to prison, Deseret Book was all over me, and
so Kurt Bench?
Yeah, Kurt was involved, but it was his bosses that were pushing him. Kurt was a good friend. To go back against what happened was they found out that Hoffman had paid, even though the price was $60,000 for me, he had paid $106,000 real dollars to Dick Marks to buy that letter to shut me up. Okay?
The Dunham letter.
The Dunham letter we're talking about.
Now, so this he sold it sound, for 20 and he bought it for 106?
It was 6,000 tax. He bought it for 100 plus the tax. We figured it was 106,000, but he used Deseret Book's money to use their money. The 106,000 came from Deseret Book. So when Hoffman goes to prison, they lean on me to go after Dick Marks for the money, okay? Get their money back.
Deseret Book leans on you.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but yeah, Deseret Book. And And Al's getting leaned on, Al Rust, for some of the Mormon money he'd sold, you know, to go after the people that, you know, that that also got hurt by Mark to buy some of those. And Al and I went to lunch. This is one of the things you'll never hear about. But Al Rust and I are good friends. I've known Al since the 1960s. We collected coins early on together. And we're good buddies. And we go to lunch. And we both made a pact. This is after long after Hoffman's in prison, when they're coming after us to go after these other people. And we both agreed that we're not going after anybody else. There's only one bad guy here, and he's in prison. So I know I was probably on a bad list somewhere for that. Russ was probably on his own with his creditors, but I think it was the smartest thing we ever did, because we would have just perpetuated the, you know, the damage with innocent people. So we didn't go after anybody or anything. We knew that Hoffman was the only bad guy in this whole thing. There was a while there where we worried a little about Lynn Jacobs maybe being involved, because Lynn was so close to Mark, you know, his best friend, really. He'd been the one that he'd given $10,000 to, Jacobs told me, to say that he found the Salamander letter. And so it was Lynn that offered the Salamander letter to President Hinckley. And that was kind of news to me, but I read that in Sillitoe's book, you know, originally.
Because Mark didn't want everybody thinking that he was finding it all.
Yeah, so too many things he's come up with. And probably why he didn't want to come to me much anymore either.
It was a secret deal between Lynn. Here's $10,000. You say you found it.
Exactly.
And then I'll split whatever.
See, Lynn was at divinity school at Harvard and was studying back there, and was a big collector of mostly imprints, foreign imprints for the church. He was brilliant when it came to knowing how many editions of the German Book of Mormon there were. He even published a book on it, a real rare little book. He only did a few copies. I've got one of them he gave me. But it's a rare little book. At any rate, he was the expert on that. And he worked with the church heavily on those things too. But there's no question that he was Hoffman's best buddy. You know, he wasn't even brought up at the Netflix thing. But that's probably because he died of AIDS back in 94. He told me all that. He gave me his testimony, if you will, of the case, his involvement, and all that. And in fact, we all thought he was the artiste. We called Lynn the artiste. We couldn't imagine Hoffman, because of his, as you're finding out, going through his journal over here, that he had any handwriting expertise whatsoever, okay? His handwriting was horrible. And this is the only bit of cursive writing they ever found was in his journal, his missionary journal. And there's only just little bits of it in cursive. But so we all thought Lynn came up with it until Hoffman offered it to me, the Salamander letter. And President Hinckley was offered it for $50,000, and so was I later. Lynn tried to blackmail President Hinckley by saying something to the effect, it's in Salamander, but he says, I didn't know any about this, I had to read the book. But he told his story to Sillitoe and Roberts later, and Throckmorton. And he just said, well, if you're not going to buy this, we'll have we may have to publicize it or something. Anyway, it was kind of a blackmail move. And what I understand, President Hinckley just kindly showed him the door. And on the way out the door, he said, well, we may offer it to Brent Ashworth. And according to Sillitoe, President Hinckley said, well, that's fine. Brent's a friend of ours. So I was glad to hear that, you know. So that's the way I knew it. But it was Hoffman that offered me the Salamander letter, and it was $50,000. And he said Lynn has it. Lynn found it. This was Hoffman. But would you like to hear what was in it? I said, well, yeah, it'd be interesting. He read me the Salamander letter for the first time. And I told him, I says, Mark, that's an obvious forgery. And he was really upset about that, because I never called anything of his a forgery. This was the first time. And he wondered why I thought it was a forgery. I says, I just happened to have been reading the Chase affidavit, which sounds like that's what Tanner was reading, too.
Oh, Gerald Tanner, yeah.
Yeah, I had just read that Chase affidavit in Mormonism Unveiled, 1840. I have a copy of it, original copy. And it had an old toad jumping out of the box instead of a salamander. And I thought, well, that's just too similar. I thought it was an early forgery. I still was wrong. You know, I thought it was an early forgery from early church history.
Well, and I think that's what Gerald thought.
Maybe so, but I thought, you know, I told him it was. I thought it was a forgery. And I said, only the church should handle that. You know, they could put it in its right setting, as President Hinckley told me they were going to do with their materials. I says, a collector can't really do that. You know, we don't have the means to do that, or the other sources to, you know.
So you're saying that the church would have turned it over to historians who would have put it in the proper
context.
Yeah,
that's what President Hinckley told me when I was going out. He says, now tell the people we're not trying to hide them, but if we get them first, we're going to give them to our historians, have them put them in their proper frame or whatever before we release them, which seems reasonable to me, but, you know, the church gets attacked on it all the time. But unfairly, which I think. But at any rate, so that's what I thought. And the other part of that story is Hoffman waved his finger at me and said, it's authentic. And he said, to prove it's authentic, it's going to be shown to Dean Jesse. Dean's going to authenticate it. And then we're going to show it to Ken Rendell. And Rendell's going to authenticate it. You know, Rendell had a whole book on Hoffman and other forgeries later. They interviewed him for this, but he didn't make the tape, I guess.
Okay.
He's a big dealer back east, has the World War II Museum. Good friend. And the third reason is it's good, and it's even going to make Time magazine. And, you know, Rick, all three of those things happened, and it's still a forgery. Everything Hoffman said was going to prove it to be authentic happened, and it's still a fake.
So the first time you saw this, you said it sounded like a forgery.
Only time that ever happened to me was on the Salamander letter.
Wow, that's interesting.
Because I had just been rereading, you know, the Chase affidavit where Joseph goes up the hill, you know, gets the rock off there, and an old toad jumps out at him. The toad salamander, you know, and I thought it was interesting how they asked him why he did a salamander, you know, on Netflix. That was the first I'd heard that, but I told him earlier, I says, this is a fake, obviously.
And so that's why he went to Steve Christensen.
Yeah.
So if you had bought that,
well,
I might be talking to Steve instead of you.
Well, I don't know. Who knows how things would have worked out? I don't know, you know. I don't know. Who knows? But it was offered to at least President Hinckley and me, I know, before, at a higher price, before Mark paid 40 for it, or before Steve paid 40 for it. So
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Brent Ashworth. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about another forgery that was caught by Brent.
So I'm looking at the handwriting. It's inscribed by Abraham Lincoln. And if there's anybody's handwriting that I really know very well, it's Lincoln's. So I'm looking at this, and it's not Lincoln's, you know? I mean, it's not even close in a lot of ways. And I told Kurt, I said, well, this is a phony. Somebody's tried to sell this to you as a Lincoln, and it's not. It's fake. Well, I went up to Hoffman's the following Wednesday morning, and that's one of the times he really hit the fan, you know? How dare you tell Kurt Bitch that that's a fake and came from... I said, Mark, I didn't even know that came from you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he never mentioned his source, you know, Kurt, to me. But I knew then where it come from.
So you caught him a few times on these forgeries.
Well, I did. I should have been a little smarter, shouldn't I?
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruptions. If you'd like to see the whole video, that's just $8 a month, and you can sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents or on our website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button. Or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and I'll just need to make sure that we're Facebook friends, and I'll add you to our insiders group, and you can see the entire interview uncut. If you'd like to get PDF transcripts of our interviews, those are just $10 a month. And for just $15 a month, I will send you paperback versions of our transcripts as soon as they come out. Or, of course, you can buy them on Amazon as well. Go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all of our transcripts there. Don't forget to sign up for our updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Of course, you can follow us at Gospel Tangents on Twitter. To hear our interviews updated to your podcast player, go to tinyurl.com/gospeltangents and make sure you give us a 5-star review. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.